Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, why does the Jewish population of Cuba fluctuate so much that it makes it difficult to calculate how many Jews there actually are in the country? Linda Hirsch is a photographer and psychologist from Sudbury, Massachusetts, where she's a member of Congregation Beth El. Although for decades travel to Cuba has been severely restricted for Americans, members of this congregation and other Jewish groups have received special permission from the United States government to visit Jewish communities there for the purpose of engaging in religious activities. After her first trip to Cuba in 2001, Linda volunteered to coordinate Beth El's project known as Cuba Connection, which provides assistance in different areas to Jewish communities there. Linda just came back from her seventh trip to Cuba, and we spoke with her about how its Jewish community has evolved over the last 13 years and what the future may have in store for it in the light of recent changes in United States policy towards Cuba. Thank you very much for speaking with us, Linda. You've spoken with us a couple of times before, and I just want to let our listeners know that I will include links to our previous conversations.
Thank you.
But
there were three previous ones. I can't believe it myself.
I know. But for listeners who might not have heard them yet, could you give a brief summary, very brief summary, of your experience with the Cuban Jewish community, how you became interested?
Sure. Stop me if I go on too long, because I just achieved a sense of closure. My very first visit was in 2001, so this is beshert, very fortunate timing that I just went to celebrate the bar mitzvah of a youth whom I met when he was 2, and it took him until the age of 16, 14 years later, to achieve his goal of becoming a bar mitzvah. So going back in 2001, my husband Gary and I had become new members. We had joined Congregation Beth El in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and discovered through a series of events that they were going to have a group go to Cuba, led by the cantor Laurel Zarkessler and her husband Arnie Zarkessler. The way that I discovered this, I don't need to elaborate upon. I went with a small group. My husband went with a small group in 2001 and returned. And everyone else went their way and went on with their lives. And I, for various reasons, both family ties, which I can explain, and a commitment to multiculturalism and a desire to explore my own Jewish roots, none of which are Cuban, I decided to launch the Cuba Connection and establish a Cuba Fund to enable, more than to assist, the Jews of the community in Cienfuegos, whom we first met. Since then, Congregation Beth El has expanded their sister relationships with numerous other Jewish communities around the country, but primarily those close to Cienfuegos, because that was our home base. So for the past, literally, close to 14 years, I have both gone back and forth 7 times, 4 of them solo, again with my husband in 2002, and we brought a small group in 2004. And the purpose of this connection was to meet some of the goals they declared, they meaning the Jews on the other side of the straits in Cienfuegos and other communities. In the beginning, the goals were they wanted their own sanctuary. Well, not every Jewish community in Cuba has their own sanctuary, but we were able to renovate homes and help make that closer to reality. And we helped to refurbish a synagogue in Santa Clara. So that was the first goal, to establish more sanctuaries to enable bar mitzvah, which we have in our own way, and encouraging others to go. We've enabled the communities through our network. We've got a beautiful network, national and international, of people who come and go. And then the third goal was to have a cemetery, a Jewish cemetery, a place to properly bury the dead. That we did not achieve in Cienfuego because it's, well, all these goals are extremely difficult logistically. However, we did assist the Santa Clara community, not only in renovating their small synagogue, but also in doing a beautiful renovation to their Jewish cemetery, which has a Holocaust memorial of note. It's quite beautiful and moving, and a film was made by their president, David Tasher, using equipment that we, Bethel, through the Cuba Fund, gave them.
You mentioned the communities of Santa Clara and Cienfuegos. How many communities are there, and about how many Jews altogether?
The overview, there are three central synagogues in Havana, two in Vedado, which is a lovely section of Havana, and one in Havana Vieja, Old Havana. They are a large central conservative shul, which used to be Orthodox. You can still see the balcony on the downstairs. Now it's conservative. That's known as the El Patronato, or Beth Shalom. That's where the headquarters of the leadership are, and a library and a pharmacy. The second one is the Sephardic shul, the Centro Sephardi, which is also renovated and houses a branch of the Holocaust Museum from Washington, D.C. They have photo montages in the foyer, beautiful museum, social hall, services for elders, etc. That's Sephardic. And the third is the Orthodox, Adath Israel, and that also has been renovated. That's the one in Old Havana where the primary base of Jewish Cuba began. That's where the base was, and the kosher butcher exists, and now the Orthodox shul itself has a kosher butchery. I just photographed that. And then in the outlying areas, there used to be seven or more communities. There are now six, and those are shrinking dramatically, which pertains to our contemporary situation, our current situation. A lot of the younger, especially the younger Jewish youths, are making aliyah to Israel and emigrating to Miami and to where they have family. So I just discovered 14 years after setting foot in Cienfuego that the community there, which had at that time been about 35, more or less, has shrunk so drastically that there are basically just two families left. And I was shocked because I hadn't known about the recent emigrations. And that brings us to the present.
This recent trip is your seventh, you said.
Yep.
How long has it been since your sixth?
I was there 2 years ago, which was a nice period of time to have elapsed. In 2012, I traveled much more broadly throughout the country. Doing it alone is quite an adventure, but I learn much more every time about logistics and my own capacity to stretch. I went to Santa Clara. My intention was to go to Santa Clara because that's when they dedicated their renovated sanctuary. And I wish to elaborate that community in Santa Clara serves now as an umbrella for Cienfuego, Sancti Spiritus, each of which are within a two-hour drive, and they embrace whatever remnants exist of Kyberian community, which almost entirely has either died out or left for Israel, and their former leader, Julito Rodriguez, is a wonderful fellow who has now come to help David Tasher in Santa Clara. So there are three communities served and one and the remnant of the fourth there southwest of Havana, and it takes about 4.5 hours by bus to get to Cienfuego, 2.5 hours or so to get to Santa Clara. And then I went on that 2012 trip, I went to Sancti Spiritus. So I covered a wide swath of territory, and the people in those three communities are very close. They observe holidays, rituals, and Shabbat quite frequently together, and they have been just a wonderful set of hosts to me and to many others whom I have sent on their behalf. So that was 2012. I also spent time in Havana. I have a cousin. I mentioned a familial motivation. I have a cousin who has lived in Cuba since the 90s. She's American-Canadian dual citizen, so it gives me a chance to reunite with her and with colleagues, friends I have made in all these years, photo, photography, journalistic colleagues, etc. So I do accomplish a great deal, but the ultimate goal is always the benefit of the Jews in Cuba, and there are strange ways to accomplish that.
About how many Jews are there in Havana?
You know, that's a difficult question to answer specifically for Havana or the country in its entirety, because as I've been writing some articles, it's a very fluid population. I would guess, and this is totally a personal guess, that there are 800 or so, is just a wild guess, because in the entire country now there are probably fewer than 1,000. The figure 1,500, 1,200 keeps getting tossed around, but that's no longer valid, because what happens, Linda, and this is profoundly inspiring and concerning me, a lot of non-Jews convert to Judaism. It's a huge process, takes a lot of study and learning of rituals, rites, and language. They pass the exam. They're examined by a rabbi who comes to visit. There is no rabbi in Cuba now. No, there's been no economic support for a rabbi for many, many decades. So they're examined by a visiting rabbi. And then, for the most part, they marry. Oh, and when they convert to Orthodox Judaism, particularly relevant because then they marry and or just emigrate, make aliyah to Israel, where if you're an Orthodox Jew, you benefit more greatly with job access and other privileges. So you've got the influx, you know, the census goes up when people convert, and then the census goes down when they emigrate. And then there are Jews who convert, who live in Cuba, who convert to Orthodoxy because they too want to emigrate to Israel to get the rights and the privileges there and more opportunities, better pay. So again, you know, you're losing numbers and you're losing brains in that regard. So the communities are definitely shrinking. In Havana, they're doing better because they're centralized and there's at least one Hebrew school still exists. And the pharmacy still manages to struggle on, even though they're still short on meds, which is very frustrating. And so that's my best guess, around 800, and the remaining 200 to 300 or so are scattered around the country.
Aside from the drop in numbers, has the community changed at all since your last visit or over the last 14 years?
Yes. Well, okay, the dates of my visits were quite relevant because they weren't regular for personal as well as financial and other reasons, because I pay for my travel entirely out of my pocket, and even though I have found casa particulares, etc., I had to pace myself. So in 2001, I went with the group from Bethel, and we didn't go deeply beneath the surface in Havana. We went to services at the Sephardic Shul. Those were well attended by the locals. We went to services at the Patronato, Beth Shalom, the large central synagogue, and there it was primarily visitors and tourists who attended. Not as many locals were there. At that point, Centro Sephardi had not been renovated, but the Patronato, Beth Shalom, had been renovated. Okay, and then the Orthodox Shul we did visit, and I think they had undergone renovations already, and they have a small, mezza average. Well, sometimes it's hard to find enough, so they do use Torah scrolls for their minyan, which is not a joke. So, you know, that was the base. And we didn't spend much time engaging with people there because we really wanted to set foot in Sanfuego and bond with them. And at that time, as I said before, Sanfuego had roughly 35 people who could be counted as Jewish. There are many intermarriages out of necessity. And so the people who intermarry, who don't convert, still go to services. They observe Shabbat and holidays, and I think they're considered Jewish by the census, and they get better meat rations, kosher meat, and a few more privileges. So that was the size, and that community was just getting up and on its feet. They hadn't renovated Rebecca Langus's home. She's the leader of what has come to be known as Kadima. They all assume Hebrew names, which is fascinating. Okay, so that was my base. And then in 2002, Gary and I went back primarily again to Sanfuego. Lifestyle was a little bit better, but people still had food rations. They're always strict on food. You know, the country controls that. And they weren't thriving, but they were getting remittances from family. They were well clothed. We began to enable them with Hebrew Torah teachings. In 2004, Gary and I brought a small group that included Rabbi L. Axelrad, renowned diaspora rabbi who did a Torah service, did a Shabbat service, read Torah, not from a scroll, but from the book. And the people there were beginning to learn more, to understand holidays more, obviously were more knowledgeable. So then I went back in 2004 at the end of the year in December for historic B'nai Mitzvah, two bar mitzvah of two youths from Cienfuegos, the oldest son of Rebecca Langus, who became bar mitzvah, and a friend of his, Frank Leon. Everyone had to travel to Havana. Things were very centralized because, remember, there's no sanctuary, per se, in Cienfuegos, just the home base. So everybody went to Havana that could afford to get on the bus that we helped pay for, and the service was joyous, and optimism was growing. And these youths who became bar mitzvah in 2004 and subsequently have become rising leaders if they stayed in Cuba. They're assuming the teaching and pulling everybody up, raising them, because the Joint Distribution Committee, which used to send Argentine rabbinical students to Havana, who then went out to the provinces to tutor, they no longer do as much. So the communities are doing more on their own, which in a way is strengthening them. Okay, then there was a long gap between 2004, that was my fourth trip, and I went back in 2006. Huge centennial celebration, 100th anniversary of organized Jewish communities in Cuba. If you go to the cemetery in Guanabacoa outside of Havana, there's a cemetery gate that has the date 1906 established. So here we are 100 years later, and the history was celebrated quite joyously. Everyone was optimistic. There was a little better economic status. Food was a little bit more abundant. They hadn't been hit by as many serious storms, which affect everyone tremendously, and the infrastructure too. So they were in a great mood. Diplomats, representatives from all over the world came, and I was there to document that and to celebrate. And everyone was very optimistic. Then there was a long gap in between 2006 and 2012. That's a long, long time, 6 years. In the middle, 2009, I decided to invite Rebecca Langus, president of Cienfuegos, to come to the United States. This took me close to 18 months or more to facilitate, because at that time she was not a known person. She was a rising leader. She was not a big wig. And I had to prove that she wasn't going to leave the country, that she, in fact, would go back to her family and her community. And it took a huge amount of tenacity and creativity to bring her to the U.S. She had never been on an airplane. She had never been out of Cuba. She did not have English fluency. And when she landed in Miami, all the Cubans on her flight were taken and sequestered and their passports removed. And I had to send someone in to expedite her release, as she was exhausted and exhilarated and spent 2 weeks both in Boston, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Florida. And she met numerous members of her own family about whom she had known or not known. And through my network, they all found their way to me. She met many of her family, and new networks were established. It was a profoundly inspiring experience for everyone involved. And she went back having been quoted in the New York Times, and that really validated her leadership skills, and she is still the president of her community. Then, okay, 2009, I waited. I was busy. I had things in my own life to deal with, and I finally went back in 2012 and visited every single person that I had bonded closely with, both in Havana, the leaders of each of the shoals, colleagues, my cousin, of course. And then in 2012, as I mentioned, I went around to Cienfuegos, Santa Clara, Sancti Spiritus, and I touched base with everyone and saw that they were all well. Only one with whom I had grown very close had died. He was the eldest in the Cienfuegos community, and he had family in Boston. A lot of connection with that family. So only one had died. Everyone was in good health, in good spirits, but there was a sense of economic hardship returning. And, of course, the embargo gets mentioned and blamed. We're blamed for that hardship. And, in fact, the Jews there realize it isn't just the U.S., that we're not the only bad guys, and or not necessarily the bad guys. They realize their own country had shortcomings, and that there were issues that were not being addressed. And they were beginning to feel this. There were fewer jobs. The pay was still terribly low, abysmally low. And that at that point, a lot of the conversions were occurring, group weddings were happening, and people were leaving. The young people were leaving. So I felt the tide had turned, and it wasn't in the direction necessarily that people anticipated, but it was out of necessity. The Jews are able to leave much more readily than non-Jews because there are agencies around the world, primarily in Canada but elsewhere in the world, that pay. Cuba is willing to take, you know, the money, of course, and to let people go. So there's no obstacles to their leaving, but it's very challenging to adjust to either Israeli or American language and customs and everything. And your family fabric is stretched and stressed as a result. So the tide had turned. And then in 2014, this trip, of course, history was made. 2 days after I left, everything broke, which I actually had realized was about to, due to my connections and my discussions with people. I was well aware that this was imminent, but the timing of coming through Hanukkah, it was just quite meaningful. And then, of course, you know, raised all the issues that people had been discussing in quiet or some people publicly for decades. You know, is this going to be real change? And for the Jews specifically, although at heart they are all Cubanos, I mean, they see themselves as Jews quite proudly so, but they are at heart Cubanos, and those who leave, the young would love to come back someday if it's possible. Their roots are still there. The elders who really can't leave, who can't find jobs elsewhere as readily or don't have the language facility, you know, you've got family fabric here really being stressed and stretched. And so the youngsters, a lot of them had already left. Now a lot are preparing to leave. They're not going to sit and wait for the next president of the U.S., the next president of Cuba. They don't know if this change is going to be real, and they want to live. So, you know, I've covered quite a span of history, and I'm still distilling all the insights and, of course, thousands of images because I've been documenting whatever I can to the best of my ability. I'm a trained photojournalist, but still, you want to engage with people. You can't be photographing the whole time. It's a lot. It's a lot, and I'm not the only one. I've been a dot on the history book pages because so many people with whom I've worked have done tremendous good, not only to on behalf of human rights, but to help fellow human beings, whether they're Jews or not. You know, these are people who have suffered, and I never expected all of what I've experienced to occur. And whatever I have been able to accomplish, and I thank my own congregation and my friends and family, and most of all the Cuban people who have taught me so much.
I was wondering if you feel that the Jewish community or the Jews, not necessarily as a community, have reacted differently to this new policy, to the change in the United States policy towards Cuba, or if they have just reacted the same as other Cubans would?
That's a terrific question. That's a difficult one to answer because I alluded to the fact that while they view themselves as Jews, they are Cubano at heart. I'd say the ones that I know, I can only speak for the ones I know well and have spoken with over the years, they have a wait-and-see attitude. They are not leaping for joy. They weren't even that talkative about the release or the activities of Alan Gross, which, as we all know now, severely compromised the Jewish community because it was to them that he gave the satellite phones. And so that has caused ripples. So from the Jewish perspective, I'd say they're very cautious in their response because they don't know really what's going to happen. And in Cuba, you keep your mouth shut. You really are afraid to speak out because you don't know if change is real, what that means. So they're very cautious, and I would say slightly optimistic, primarily because the young people are still going to benefit, whether they stay or leave. And why is this? Well, Israel is a major player, much more major than any of the articles I have seen thus far in the recent weeks. Israel is a much bigger player than most people realize. So the Jews in Cuba have a sort of, in a bizarre way, a paradoxical way, a safety net that they know no matter what happens in Cuba, pretty much no matter what happens, that they have a safety net, that they can leave for Israel if they so desire. Not that it would be easy, and of course it isn't. That's why they haven't all left. But they have a different sense of identity and security than the general Cubano population. Even though they're in such a vast minority, that are helped to leave and to get aid on the ground. So, as I said, they're very cautious because they have been compromised. They were always monitored. I mean, everyone in Cuba is monitored. They're watched by the local organizations, the CDRs, the groups that, you know, monitor who does what, when, and where. And they're watched by the central censors who watch the emails and so forth. So they're always going to be more cautious than the average Cuban because of the recent, the arrest of Allen and other related events. So, you know, that raises the whole question religiously of access and agency. These are two words I come back to a lot. The Cuban Jews have always had a lot of access to the outside world because of their diaspora networks and family. That will increase if U.S.-Cuban relations improve. And agency, in this case, I'm referring to the sense of control, and that comes right back to what I said about the safety net. Psychologically, they may be fearful or had been more fearful of being watched or punished for being involved in such activities as the satellite phones. But now their sense of control is different. I think they're seeing a glimmer of the opportunity to either leave. They have that sense of control. They can leave. Or to continue growing their communities despite the pro-Palestinian sentiment of the government. There is a lot of trade with Israel going on under the table and around the corner and so forth. And they see the coming and going between families of Israel as a real plus. They will have more sense of control over access to free information, freedom of movement, and psychologically, if not physically and economically, I think, you know, that sets them apart a little bit from the overall populace.
Do you foresee that because of this, the Cuban community will practically disappear? Do you think that they'll emigrate to the States where they have family into Israel and practically disappear? Or do you think that there's a strong enough feeling of roots in Cuba to make them stay there and grow?
For me, as I said, I'm the little dot on the page. It's a huge responsibility to even respond. But, you know, the title of my next exhibition is going to be Turning the Corner. I do see this as a liminal portal, a time of real transition and real transformation. And I don't see it as all one way. I see it as opening a portal, as Cuba has always been the gateway from the different parts of Europe and the rest of the world through Cuba to South America and other places back to the U.S. It's always served as a gateway. I still see its role as very vital in that regard, and I think it's going to now be more of a two-way, you know, in and out. I do worry. I often refer to myself as channeling Anne Frank, whose family could have ended up in Cuba and almost did, because I'm afraid of, you know, that Vishniak-esque documenting the disappearing Jews of Cuba. I used to feel that more, and now I don't quite feel as much so. Again, so I think it's a two-way. It's going to be a two-way, very dynamic situation, at least for the next 5 years, because don't forget, we are going to change presidents in the U.S. We're going to change presidents in Cuba. Hypothetically, a change will occur in Cuba. It's supposed to. And then we don't know who's going to assume power, what their policies or attitudes will be. We have Congress to deal with, and the exile community, whom I haven't even begun to touch on, who have very firm views of a much more pessimistic and painful nature. I have many, many exiled Cuban friends. So, I mean, I see a huge range of possibilities and expectations, and my prayer is that people will remain safe, psychologically safe and physically safe, and that the change will not be rapid or destructive as tourism can be to the environment and to the infrastructure. So there's this, again, the yin and the yang, the two-way dynamic. I see Jews leaving, yes, primarily the young, because the older ones just can't easily get jobs, learn the language. They'll stay and continue whatever near Tamid flame they can fuel, so that if and when things do improve, those who are really miss their families and true Cuban roots will come back and be able to do what is being promised, greater ownership greater access to information, commercial and other kinds of employment, and real control. A sense of control is, to me, the brightest flickering flame here, and it's still flickering.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but yep. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll talk again in a couple of years and see how the situation has progressed.
Yes, I'm going to return primarily now through my journalistic skills to continue teaching photo skills and here on this side of the strait, enabling transitions and educating, and you've been so helpful. Thank you, and happy, healthy new year.
Thank you. Same to you.
And if you would like to listen to our previous English Corner programs with Linda Hirsch, we're including links on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.